episode 73 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Break Room. I'm your host, Brad Treffler. Before we get into this week's episode, I want to ask a quick favor of you. I'm putting together a session for ISTE 19 that will consist of me and five other education podcasters doing a round panel on what education podcasting is like and how we should be having discussions about education. Guests include former guests of the show Dan Krynas and Dr. Will DeAmport, as well as Jeff Bradbury of TeacherCast, the On Education host Mike and Glenn, and Gabriel Carrillo of EdTech Bites. It is being entered in the People's Choice category, which means we need people to vote for our session in order for us to get in. So I'm asking you to take 1 minute, whether you're going to ISTE this year or not, and vote for our Education Podcasters Roundtable. You can vote easily by going to bradshuffler.com/vote. That will take you straight to the ISTE site to cast your vote. Again, that's bradshuffler.com/vote. Even if you're not going, you can register with the ISTE site, and it'll take 2 seconds, and then you just click on our session and say you want to vote for it. So I'd really appreciate it if you gave some support to the podcast. Back to the podcast. This week on the show, I am joined by Dr. Sam Fesich, professor of educational technology and education at Growth City College, author of EduMagic, and fellow member of the EduMatch Network. Sam and I talk about the process of writing a book, some of the differences between college and K-12 education, helping others find their confidence to share what they're doing, being a lifelong learner, trying new things, and technology in the special needs classroom. So, sit back and enjoy episode 73 of the Planning Period Podcast, my interview with Dr. Sam Fesich. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Treffler, and I'm joined today by another of the guests that the wonderful Dr. Sarah Thomas connected me with, and I am joined by Dr. Sam Fesich. I think I got that right.
Absolutely, yes. Woohoo! Excited to be here.
Nailed it.
Woo. Nailed it.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining me, Sam. I appreciate it, and helping me with pronunciation of your name before we started recording, because otherwise I would not have gotten that correct.
My pleasure.
Could you, for my audience that don't know you and did not come across you on some other podcasts as I have, tell them a little bit of who you are and what you're about?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on, Brad. This is going to be a lot of fun. So my name's Sam Fesich, and I am professor at Grove City College, which is a little north of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania. At Grove City, I teach pre-service teachers a course geared towards educational technology for all majors, no matter what, for education majors, I should say. And then I also teach courses related to special education. So one is a general intro to special ed class, and then other courses relate to student teaching, practicum, and then one class is about students with high incidence disabilities. So it's a lot of fun every day. I enjoy hanging out with pre-service teachers and learning from and with them. So yeah, it's a good time.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, I always get excited to have collegiate level guests because I feel like as someone in the public space, in the K-12 space, I have a good grasp on what that looks like. And I don't have a great grasp on the college scene, especially given that I didn't go to college for education. I feel like I know very little about educational programs at universities. So I'm excited to get to talk to you a little bit about that. But you're also the author of a book, correct?
This is true. The rumors are true, Brad. Yes. Yeah. So I just wrote a book called EduMagic, A Guide for Pre-Service Teachers. And what it does, it challenges pre-service teachers to rethink when teaching starts. Oftentimes, you know, we think teaching starts and we cross that stage, we have our diploma or our first teaching job, but actually it starts 8 a.m. Monday morning, freshman year, your very first college class related to education. You're learning to be a professional, an educator of excellence while in college. And so this book walks through several different features of that idea. And what's really cool about it is it shines a light on pre-service teachers by bringing out their stories in their own words so they can read about what other pre-service teachers have done in their teacher prep programs to help them become educators of excellence with a little bit of EduMagic. So it is so cool to just be able to share their stories and inspire others and just grow and learn from them as well.
Very cool. Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's great. I, I've said before, I think we all, many of us at least, like to say that we have a book inside of us. We could write a book, and not everybody goes out and does it. So I think that's always, I'm always impressed by people who have just accomplished that portion of it, let alone have it be read by people.
I know, right? Whenever it gets bought, you're like, whoa, that's kind of cool. So just today, a pre-service teacher tweeted out a picture of the cover saying, really, you know, that he was excited to read it. And I thought that was, I was like, wow, it's real. Look, that was so cool.
It exists.
It's for real.
That's pretty much the same feeling I get when people say, like, oh, yeah, I listen to your podcast. I'm like, dude, why?
Wow.
I just do this.
Oh,
for
come
me.
On now. Give yourself some credit, Brad.
No, it's cool. It is. I know that feeling of your thing being out there and people commenting and reading and, you know, thinking about it. It's an odd discomfort, right? Like, because you knew that was going to happen. You want that to happen. And yet it still is uncomfortable, I feel like.
Yeah, it's like, oh, somebody read that. I hope they liked it. I hope they were inspired by it. But you always, I don't know, I just worry like, oh no, it's going to be like that critic out there. I'm waiting for it. I'm worried about it. So,
yeah. Your first like one star review will crush you.
No.
Like, it's inevitable. It'll happen.
I know. It will happen. It but that's future Sammy's problem. So,
that's good. That's good. I push a lot of problems off on future Brad. So I support this.
Those poor people.
So tell me, what was the book writing process like for you?
Well, honestly, it was fun and it was exciting because I was working with an amazing publisher, with Sarah Thomas. Oh my goodness. She is phenomenal. When you work with Sarah, you feel like you're the only person that she's focusing in on that time for your book to be published. She is in your corner, bouncing ideas, a person to bounce off ideas and get that encouragement and that, and just that you're doing the right thing and that your message will be heard. It's phenomenal to work with. What I had, great content as well. So I had I was just at the right time, at the right place, I feel, to share these stories of pre-service teachers. And I'm so blessed that they were, allowed me to share their stories and bring in their voice into the book as well, which I think really makes it very authentic and real, because it's actual pre-service teachers sharing how they approach things like digital presence as a pre-service teacher, or how they tackled their PLN and how they started to grow their network and met people at ed camps or workshops or state conferences. It's so neat to just be able to share their stories and their voice, and then connect them together and weave them into this narrative that's all about EduMagic. It's also really cool to have them go in and reflect on some of the things that's talked about in the book as well. And of course, have their name in print is always really fun. So it was just the right time at the right place to share their stories with an amazing publisher who just wanted to get that message out there and believed in me and believed in my message, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, Sarah is, she's one of those people that just sort of makes other people's dreams come true, it seems like, right?
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. We should tweet that. Sarah Thomas, making dreams come true.
Making other people's dreams come true. That's how she rolls.
Yes.
I like it. I love that. I love that process. I think it's great that you were able to sort of incorporate other people's voices and stories into yours. I think that's a really powerful way to increase the gain of the book, is because it's not just coming from your voice. You know, we try to do that in the classroom as well. We want to bring in other voices to support what we're saying. So that's always a good way to go about that.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, it's really fun too. They can get a different spin on things and a different way to think of things that maybe I didn't think of, or a different way to approach it or to phrase things. Yeah, it's really cool.
For any audience member I have, anyone listening right now that thinks I want to write a book about X, Y, and Z, what would be your biggest piece of advice?
I would say try to schedule some time to sit down and write, and don't write for other people, write for yourself. So when you sit down to write, like, give yourself an hour or two or whatever time you have, and just get your thoughts out there. Don't worry about editing, or that is not perfect English, you know, just get it out there and get those thoughts out there, that the refinement will come. Just start. And I think that's the hardest part, is just to start see what comes out on the document. Just sit down, give yourself some time to think, breathe, and write.
Yeah, I support that. I like it. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Let's go with that. I actually participate in National Novel Writing Month every year in November, and I run the Orlando region with a bunch of people. And so that's always our biggest advice to people is just put words on the page. It's mm-hmm. all you have to do. It's all that matters. Clean up your drafts later, make it awful and terrible and a giant pile of garbage, but it's a pile of garbage that didn't exist before.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that can go along the same lines for writing a paper or something for an assignment. Just start somewhere. I think the hardest part is just starting.
Yeah. Cool. Good advice. I like it.
Hey.
Before we get to my questions, my normal questions, I just want to get a little picture here. You're a college professor now. Were you in public education before, or have you always been in higher ed?
Yeah. So before I was professor, I taught students with multiple disabilities at a school in Westmoreland County. So I was a special education teacher for 4 years. Two of those years, I worked with students with multiple disabilities, and that was my first classroom, and it was phenomenal, my favorite teaching experience. And then my last 2 years at that school, I was a kind of like a tech coach for the school, where I would push in technology into the different classrooms. So at the school that I worked, it was just a school for kids with disabilities. So I worked with students 5 to 21, all kinds of different disabilities, were serviced there. So students with autism, physical needs, intellectual disabilities. And we use all sorts of different technology to get them to make the impossible possible. So some students use some assistive technologies to help them speak. Some use, like we use like the Wii gaming system, which was cool, like back in the day, that was cool. So we used that for like adapted gym, where they would do that with bowling and just get the range of motion and movement with their gross motor. We used flip video cameras. They were cool too before we had, you know, smartphones. And students would record their own news show using the flip video camera. And that was really cool to you know, help with their literacy and, you know, speaking and things like that. We use laptops. We had a laptop cart, or maybe two at the time. I can't remember exactly, where students would go in and they would do back channeling. What was really cool was we were doing a lesson, maybe on the solar system or astronomy, but what was in the content doesn't matter. What was happened, the activity was really cool because we were watching a video, you know, okay, great, we're watching a video, but we were using a back channel, and we had one student in there who was select mute, and he didn't speak very often. So it was hard to see what he understood about the content. So we were doing the back channel using Today's Meet, and he was in there typing away, answering questions and providing additional content. It was so cool to see what he understood from that content piece and what he was able to add to the conversation using his laptop. So that was really cool to see that. And, you know, from there, like, we started to integrate that more into that specific class. Using the smart board obviously was really cool as well for students with physical disabilities, or students who are more involved with their multiple disabilities, using it just for cause and effect. So we used a variety of different tools, which really helped students become as independent, as successful as they can be using different types of educational technology. So that was my special ed life, and it was amazing. And then I was given the opportunity to study at Penn State for my PhD, and I couldn't pass it up. So that's what I did. And then I'm here at Grove City working with amazing pre-service teachers.
Very cool. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me, as someone who was in the K-12 space previously and now is in the higher ed world, as we say, what was that transition like? Was it a rude awakening, or was it a surprise to you what you found, or?
No, not really, because whenever I was teaching at the K-12, I also did some adult learning classes, you know, professional development with the teachers in our school. So it was teaching adults, and I just thought, you know, where can we continue to have this excitement for teaching and learning? Well, when they're first starting college, when they're first wanting to be a teacher, where can we impact more? Where can I impact more educators? And that was through teaching adults. And so, yeah, really wasn't a surprise. I think teaching adults, I use a lot of different techniques such as, you know, building relationships with your students. So doing that with my college students from day one, we have a shared Spotify playlist. I'm saying, and I tell them, if it's appropriate, if you can play it to kids, we can play it here. So, so having that, putting in, Bitmojis. So meeting them where they are. I have Bitmojis on my syllabus and on presentations and things like that. And I recently got like a course eval back that said, oh my gosh, her syllabus had Bitmojis in it. How cool is that? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty cool. But I learned that from a student. So like 2 years ago, I had a great student, Jordan Pastilli, who showed me the wonderful world of Bitmojis. And since then, I've been putting them everywhere. So like just using things that that are best practices in K-12, I think could really mesh well with adult learning as well. So building those relationships is foundational. Having, I send positive notes at the end of the year. So the last day of classes, I have students doing, each student has their name on a flyer around the room, and each student goes on and writes an encouraging word or something because it's finals week coming up. So we do a nice positive, you know, end on a positive note type thing. So building those relationships and having that as a foundation to teaching, and whether it be K-12 or higher ed, I think is so critical.
Cool. Well, that gives us some good context to move into our first question. And sure. My first question for all my guests is, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
So I thought about this, and I thought maybe taking it from a different angle. So like the biggest problem facing education, like preparing teachers. Is that okay if I take it that way?
Yeah, sure.
All right, cool. Because I feel like that's where I have my most experience. So I think one of the biggest problems in preparing future teachers is promoting their confidence when they don't have a lot of teaching experience. So they're just coming right out of high school, freshmen, sophomores, and college. They don't have any real teaching experience. Like maybe they've done a couple of observations, or maybe they've taught a lesson or two, but they feel like they don't really have a voice, or that nobody really cares what they have to say, like in the education world. And like, I've learned that through taking them to conferences where someone like, yo, Dr. Fessage, I don't think anyone cares what I have to say. I'm just a pre-service teacher. And that's like nails on a chalkboard to me. I get like the cringies whenever I hear that, because no, like they absolutely do have something to say. They have ideas. They have things they're learning about in classes and strategies and new cool tech tools that, you know, people want to learn about, and they want to hear what their ideas are, and they're fresh and their excitement for education. So I think one of the biggest problems is their misconception that they don't have a voice because of that they don't have a lot of teaching experience in front of children in an actual classroom. I think they do have a voice when it comes to teaching and practice and pedagogy. They just have to have that confidence to do so. And I think one way to do that is to promote that positive professional presence, whether that be through Twitter, or I know Instagram is becoming a big thing with pre-service teachers posting stuff out on there, you know, building up their network through Pinterest, finding awesome ideas, or pinning what they're doing in the classroom, an awesome bulletin board or a great activity that they did, or a breakout box thing that they worked on with their cooperating teacher. So just promoting themselves as a professional educator and owning it early in their career, I think is something that we can work on when it comes to teacher prep.
It's interesting because while you're talking about dealing with pre-service teachers and supporting them, I think this problem of sort of confidence in having something to add to the discussion occurs even with veteran teachers often. And it occurs a lot for me whenever I start to talk about Twitter as a professional network and how you can use it to share ideas and get ideas. And often I will hear, yeah, but I'm just a teacher, or I'm just blank. You know, I'm not doing anything special or whatever. And often to me that speaks about, you know, a school not necessarily supporting their teachers or encouraging them and working on staff morale, because if they don't feel like they have something to offer, then no one's told them they do. But even still, I think that a lot of us have that tendency to maybe undervalue some of our things, you know, if especially when it comes easy to us, so we just assume it's easy for everybody else, right? But I think it's interesting with pre-service teachers, because they are right in the sense that they don't know anything. And I don't mean that in an insulting way. They just don't have any experience with it to have it. But like you said, they also do still have a lot to offer to the discussion at large.
Right. Right. There's a difference there. I think there's a difference between the teaching experience, like experience in front of kids in the classroom, getting those hours in, and teaching, like understanding teaching and what new strategies you're learning about. Maybe you're doing this really cool, you made some really cool Animoto video or something to introduce a lesson. You know, share that out. That's cool.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there is a tendency to not do that. And I don't really know why necessarily. I guess I'm just never someone that has had that concern, and, you know, hence running a podcast with 70 something episodes and hours of my voice on the internet. But it is interesting to think about, to try to understand people that have that hang up, because it's not something mm-hmm. I do relate with. It's hard for me to know the right ways to push people out of that shell. So how do you go about doing that? You mentioned taking your students to conferences.
Yeah. So one way to kind of push them out of the nest a little bit is just take them to conferences. So I've taken a couple to a local statewide conference, a couple of local Lake Pittsburgh conferences and ed camps and things like that. So for ed camps, like the first part, like for an ed camp is, you know, I tell them, well, what's something you want to talk about? What's something you want to learn about? You know, put on a post-it note, pop it up there. If you feel confident to lead a discussion, that's great too. And the first time we ever went to an ed camp, I went with 4 or 5 pre-service teachers. And we had never, ever been to an ed camp before. So we're all noobs. We're sitting in the back, not knowing much to do. And one of my students or former students, she looks at me and goes, Dr. Vesich, I think I follow that person on Twitter. Oh, you should go say hi. Oh, no, I could never do that. By the end of the day, she was having coffee with this person. You know, just making those connections and just giving them confidence, I think, is critical. For Twitter, it's okay to lurk for a little bit, but you have to jump in the conversation at some point because you have things to share and people want to learn about them. One way I get that conversation going is I do an exit tweet about once or twice a week during classes, and just to get their voice out there, whether it be like, what's one takeaway you've learned from this class? What's one way you can use this tech tool in your future classroom? Whatever it may be, it's starting to leave some breadcrumbs of awesomeness through the internet that people can find when they Google them. When it comes to going to workshops, like I actually have students, I will like send them a quick email like, hey, there's this conference going on. They're doing a proposal request. You want to do something? And then they take the lead on it. So they're in the planning and the development and in the presentation part. So I'm just kind of like trying to present them with opportunities and give them the steering wheel to take it. So we just recently went to a local conference. I went with 3 pre-service teachers, and before the conference, when they did their proposals, I'm like, hey, what do you guys want to present about? I think you 3 would be a great team. What can we do? And they came back with virtual co-ops, which was awesome. And then they took a part of the presentation, developed it. We practiced it a couple times, and they did amazing. So putting them in the driver's seat, I think, helps build that confidence that, yes, you can do this. It sounds a little scary, like writing a conference proposal. Even that in itself is a huge accomplishment as a pre-service teacher, but actually going out and presenting it is awesome, because now you're getting in front of administrators and teachers, people that want to hear what you have to say, and you have a platform here and you can really speak in the lives of teachers and maybe, who knows, maybe even your future employer. I've had students who've gone to conferences with me who were offered, hey, whenever you graduate, look me up. I want to hire you. And they were only like a sophomore in college, which is really cool.
That is very cool. Yeah, I think of whenever we talk about pre-service teachers and being connected, I think of Sarah Ann Lone from the Voice Ed Radio Network, and how she was, well, I told her at the time, because she was already running an education podcast as a pre-service teacher, and I was doing blogging and was a community manager on Voice Ed, and I told her all along that she's the most over-prepared pre-service teacher ever. And that if she wanted to move to Orlando, I could find her a job. She did not take me up on that. So, but yeah, no, I think it's great. And the way that you're pushing these pre-service teachers to sort of get out there and do those things, it's not just digital breadcrumbs, as it were. It makes a phenomenal portfolio builder to be able to say, I'm involved in this space. I'm someone that is doing this beyond what is just required of me. And this is something I really want to be great at, you know? And I think that's the difference those are the people that really want to be great at what they're doing. And that's just something so powerful.
Absolutely. And it really does show, and it can come across in their energy and their excitement, not just on paper or on their digital portfolios, but when they get that call for that interview, they can really speak to some different ways that they've developed as an educator. And this is just one of them. It's fantastic. And they don't do this for a class. They don't do this for extra credit. They just do, I guess, extra credit for life. But like, I don't know, it's just an amazing thing that I don't think I would be able to do that as an 18 or 19-year-old pre-service teacher. I'm so excited that they have the courage to step out and be and just share their story, share their ideas and their strategies. I think it's amazing. Like presenting at conferences, I don't think I could do that as a young teacher, as an 18 or 19-year-old. But oh my gosh, it's just so cool to be along for the ride.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. So we need to be pushing people out there to find their confidence, to share their voice. I think that's definitely something we need to be working on more. I think that's a valid concern, to say the least. So I'm gonna allow it. I like it. It's a good answer to question
All right,
number
cool.
one.
I like how you say I allow it.
I'm gonna allow it. It's my show. I can do that.
I think that's fun.
All right. Well, good job. So far, so good. Let's see how we do with question number two.
Cool.
Sometimes when I do this, I feel like a game show host.
Yeah, question I'm feeling the game two. Show host vibe, honestly. Yeah. I feel like I should buzz in.
Well, there's no one but you. I mean, I guess I could answer my own questions, but nobody really wants to hear that. all right. So question number two.
Sure.
What is something that you're doing that you wish all teachers would do?
Yeah. I would say, I'm going to go back to the example of the Bitmoji. I would say never stop learning with your students because they need you to keep learning. So be a lifelong learner, I think, would be my advice there. So like a couple of years ago, Jordan taught me about Bitmojis and I've never stopped using them. I think they're amazing. But now like I have to like up my game with Snapchat. So I have to get involved there because I want to meet my students where they are. And I want to learn how they're using these tools for education to connect, how they can maybe use Snapchat with their future students that they're going to have. So I think honestly, just meeting students where they are and never stop learning. Going to workshops with my students, listening to podcasts, attending ed camps and things like that, just keeping my learning going so I don't stop. And so I keep learning for my courses and I keep implementing new technology tools, new resources as I find them online through webinars, whatever it may be, but never stop learning. I think that's so key, especially in higher ed. I think it can be I think oftentimes we can get into that, you know, always publish, but never stop learning for yourself to be an educator of excellence. Will you allow it?
I allow it again. I allow it. No, I like it. I would say that's a correct answer. moving on to question number three and the $1 million prize. Anyways, there's not really a $1 million prize. I'm sorry.
Oh man.
I know. It's a real shame. No, I think you're right. I think that the lifelong learning situation is something we really need to consider. And I feel like far too often I find teachers who say, this is how we've always done it, or this is the way I learned it, or whatever. And so much of that rigidity that is just not good for what we're doing is wrapped up in this lack of lifelong learning. I cannot imagine feeling like, oh, I already know everything there is to know about X. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. There's nothing out there I know everything about. There's always something new to learn. And so it's always fascinating to me that people don't feel that way. But when people do, man, it really takes away the limits because there's just pretty much nothing we can't do.
Right. I would also add to that, like, challenge yourself to try something new. So like this past summer at ISTE, the ISTE 10 network or teacher ed network, we tried something new as a group. We decided we were going to hold a pre-conference the Saturday before ISTE for pre-service teachers. And this is something we've never done before. And as a group, we collaborated digitally, and we all met. We've never met before, so we all met that day or the night before in Chicago, and we had a fantastic conference for these pre-service teachers and new educators in the area, and it was such a cool experience. One thing that I did that I've never done before was an Ignite session, and I was so nervous, and of course, I had to be the first person up there, and oh my goodness, it was so nerve-wracking, but it was the best thing I ever did because I got out of my comfort zone and I tried something new. So from that experience, I thought to myself, well, how can I incorporate this new type of presentation into one of my courses? So this past fall, I implemented Ignite sessions into my classes just to have my students be aware of there's other types of ways to present material other than like a PowerPoint and a lecture. Try out this type of Ignite session. When's the time you'd want to use this in your classroom? How could this benefit students? How can it help your learning? So trying something new and challenging yourself to do that, I think is really cool because you never know what you're going to learn from it.
You just like, I got totally sidetracked in my head because you mentioned that you presented at the Ignite and I was like, oh my God, of course, that's where I saw you before.
No, not that Ignite. No, it was at the pre-ISTE.
Oh, at the pre-ISTE. Okay. I wasn't at that one.
Where was that? It was really cool. It was a lot of fun. We're doing it again in Philly this year.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's a great experience.
I'll have to come check it out if I get in on time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So yeah, it is. I think what you said there's a lot of you taking chances and taking risks in there. And I think it's important that we model that. And I think that you're right, that risk taking, that trying something new, it goes perfectly in line with that lifelong learning, because you try something and if you find, well, I liked it, but I could be better at it, well, then now that's your new thing to learn for a while. You know, it's I think that's a great thing to combine. I like combining both of those. That's good. Yeah. Cool. And also Ignites are utterly terrifying. And
aren't they?
Especially in front of large audiences. Oh my God, you're crazy. I can talk to anybody all day, but put me in a 5-minute timer and I have to auto advance slides. That is not my strength.
Oh
man.
My gosh. It's an interesting way to present. I'll give you that.
It gets all your ideas concise.
Yeah. How did it go?
I mean, it went fine. It was just like, I blacked out. I don't really remember being on stage. So I remember walking up on stage and then I got down and I just went, oh, what just happened? Anybody
have that film?
I've seen video of it since, so I know it wasn't terrible. I said what I meant to say, so.
That's awesome.
So that's good. But yeah, no, I think you're right. Trying new things leads perfectly in line with lifelong learning. Mm-hmm. And I think they're both things that we all should be doing so much more of. And I think for the other benefit for you is your students see that you're modeling exactly what you're saying. You're out there trying new things. You're still learning. This belief that you're not the, you know, I'm the all-knowing everyone, man behind the curtain kind mm-hmm. of thing. Like, that doesn't help anyone.
Absolutely. So I tell them that in class. I'm like, guys, the smartest person in the room is this whole room. We all can benefit from each other's experience, ideas. We all have something to contribute here. So let's all, you know, have this discussion. Let's all be involved in this whole learning process together.
Excellent. Well, you know what? Oh. You're 2 for 2 and you're going to the final round.
Woohoo!
Going to the final round.
Lightning round.
That's what I'm going to start calling it from now on my show, because why not?
You totally should.
It's my show. Welcome to the final round.
It's your show. You've got this.
You've made it this far. I feel like I need a stack of index cards. I just want to be like.
I feel like you need like a spotlight too.
Yeah. Well, I have a spotlight, but no one else sees it. It's fine. I have problems. Anyways. So my third question for all my guests is, who is the greatest teacher you have ever had?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this one, and I feel like this is where everybody stumbles because everyone has amazing teachers. How do you narrow it down to just one? But I know we have to. So in light of discussion about talking about students with special needs, I'm going to have to say my supervisor at the school that I worked with, her name was Cindy Schaefer, and she just was amazing for advocacy and leveling that playing field for students with disabilities and making sure that they had access to the assistive technology or educational technology that they needed. She just blew me out of the water with just her passion and excitement for working with students with special needs, specifically with ed tech. So like she worked a lot with funding different resources and different types of grants and just, you know, pushing me to try to get outside my comfort zone when it came to writing grants, when it came to applying for those types of things, because that's kind of hard. I think grant writing is not one of my strengths, and that and writing for that type of audience is very different. But she really pushed me to try to do that. And I was able to win some nice grants for the school that I worked with. And one of those things was, at the time, remember, this was a couple of years ago, touchscreen computers were cool. So, we won a couple of those and we were able to, put five of those touchscreen computers into different classrooms, specifically in the classrooms with students who had autism, so they could use it to communicate, to navigate the internet, to navigate their different websites that they were using in the classroom. So that was really cool to see the effect of the power of a grant can have in a school for students with special needs. So I would have to say Cindy Schaefer. She was phenomenal and just pushing me to become better for my students and seeing that impact is just phenomenal.
I like it. You know, it's I always enjoy, number one, when people struggle to answer my questions, when you have to like think about them hard.
Because I thought you did. It sounded like you enjoy the struggle a little bit there.
I enjoy the struggle. You like pushing people out of their comfort zones. I like making people think. What can I say? I'm thinking as I'm listening and the connections between your three answers, it all comes down to this sort of hatred for comfort zones. if you boil them all down together, then really that's what it seems like. You know, a lot of your advocating is coming from is saying that, you know, we need to be pushing ourselves. And that started with one of your mentors pushing you out of your comfort zones, mm-hmm. and trying new things. And it goes on to you doing the same thing, not only for yourself, but also for all of your students as well, and making them comfortable in their voice and trying something they're not necessarily comfortable with. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that all three of your answers tie nicely together with this beautiful idea of comfort zones are the devil.
Well, my dad always said, Sammy, don't ever get comfortable and don't get stagnant. So maybe that's kind of where it's all rooted in. Great advice from
there
dad.
We go. It all comes from your dad. Good job, Mr. Fesich. That's probably that's, not Mr.
No,
Fesich,
but good try.
Mr. Fesich?
Yeah. No, we'll just stop there.
Yeah, it could have been.
Totally.
Who knows?
Sure.
We'll go with that. you know, I, Sam, I really appreciate your time. You really have nicely tied together a simple idea, but something that I think many of us struggle with, even though we know we shouldn't. We know we shouldn't stay comfortable in our comfort zones. We know we need to push ourselves out of them. But I think sometimes it can be hard to actually do. So I think it's a good reminder.
Thank you. I mean, I'm glad you found that little nugget and all those answers. That was awesome. Way to go.
It's because I'm an expert at this.
Like,
I've got nothing left to learn.
I'm
now a perfect podcaster. I don't have anything left to learn.
And learning done.
And done. I clearly took the message to heart.
Nailed it.
So, Sam, I really do appreciate your time. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. How can my audience get a hold of you if they would like to follow up?
Sure. So I'm online at sfesich.com and on Twitter and Instagram, sfesich. Keep it pretty simple.
That does make it easy. Having a unique last name is definitely helpful.
Yeah. I know, right?
you know, people like think about that with their kids now. They're like, before they name their children, they're like trying to look up the web addresses and like, Twitter accounts to make sure they exist. Yeah, they do that. People do that. It's crazy. It's a weird world. Actually, it makes total sense to me, if I'm being honest. It makes total sense. Name recognition is really valuable. And if you're like the first search result without trying, that's really a plus.
Yeah, I agree. All right. I'll allow it.
Good. I'm glad.
See
I'm
what
glad
I did
you'll
there?
Allow it.
See what I did there?
I do. I would like to see what happened if you didn't allow it, because I'm the one that edits.
I don't want to see that. So. I don't want to see that.
So, Sam, Dr. Fesich, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for chatting with me today.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
Sam, thank you so much for chatting with me and joining me on the show. It was a really fun chat with a lot of laughs. To connect with Sam, visit her website at samsfesich.com or on Twitter and Instagram at sfesich. Links to all of those, of course, are in the show notes. If you have comments or questions about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter. I'm at Brad Schreffler, and the same on Instagram as well. I love to hear from you over there. That's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Or check out the feedback page on my website, which gives you options for feedback as well, which you can find at bradschreffler.com/feedback. Until next week, find your way out of your comfort zones.
Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio. Your voice is right here.